The First Time, Part 1 of the Invited Series. A Labyrinth Story, written by Astolat and read by Calicaria. There was no Goblin King, and he didn't answer girls in suburbia who called on him, not even when they offered him sweet little babies to carry away. Otherwise she wouldn't have, ever, ever, ever. She had wanted to believe, but you couldn't believe in things like that until he was standing on the balcony doorway offering your dreams in one hand and a nightmare in the other, and magic was suddenly real and terrible and nothing at all like playing games in the park. "Why me?" she asked Hoggle the next day, sitting out under the big maple tree in her backyard, cuddling Toby fiercely on her lap. All the world was washed clean and smelling like spring. Why did he come to me?
You said the words,
Hoggle said, evasively. People say dumb things like that all the time, Sarah said. The goblins don't always come. Please, Hoggle, tell me. Is it the book? Is it the magic book?
Is it me? She wanted to ask. Am I magic?
Oh, Sarah, he said, his clumsy big head sagging. Magic had rules. She understood that much. Jareth would never have given her a fighting chance to rescue Toby otherwise, or he would have just thrown her into a pit somewhere when she was getting close.
It's not much of a fighting chance, Hoggle said awkwardly, if you give it to a girl who didn't know any better about magic and thinks there's no such thing as goblins.
He picked me because he thought it was going to be easy? Sarah said, indignation bubbling up in her, hot and slow.
Well, Hoggle said.
He thought I was just going to let him keep Toby? Sarah said.
I thought you would try and fail, Jareth said,
and she whirled her head around to see him in the deepest shade leaning against the tree trunk and looking down at them, arms folded over his chest. He wore dark green, and bones and feathers dangled in his hair. Hoggle scrambled up to his feet with clenched fists.
Really, Hoggle? He can't hurt you, Hoggle said to Sarah.
She was standing, too, without consciously planning to be. Her arms were tight around Toby's squirming body.
That's promising a bit much, Jareth said.
He crossed the shade toward her. Sarah held her ground, even when he reached out to lift her chin, and his fingers stopped just short of touching her. She realized she could almost see through him, a suggestion of the branches behind him moving in the wind. She bet that if he came into the sunlight, he would barely be there at all.
If you'd tried and failed, then he'd have your brother and you. But since he lost, Hoggle said pointedly, making Jareth's eyes narrow in annoyance, though they never left Sarah's. He can't come after either of you, ever again.
You have no power over me, Sarah quoted, looking up to meet Jareth's gaze.
None but what you give me,
Jareth said softly, raising the back of his hand as if to stroke along her cheek, without ever making contact. Do you still think I'm stupid? Sarah said. I think you should leave now, she added, hitching Toby closer, and felt a sudden sharp thrill of power as Jareth's hand dropped and he stepped back from her, his mouth sulky. He said nothing else, only looked at her, and then from one moment to the next he was gone, except for a beating of wings that rustled through the leaves overhead. And that's that, Sarah said, after a moment, and sat back down on the grass. We showed him, huh, Toby? Not bad for a dumb girl. She bounced him on her lap, and Toby giggled, not caring that she was holding him tight so her hands wouldn't shake. Hoggle said anxiously, looking over his shoulder as he sat down slowly with her again.
Don't gloat.
Why shouldn't I? Sarah said, recklessly. She wasn't going to be afraid. We beat the Goblin King, Hoggle. I think that calls for a little gloating.
It calls for thanking your lucky stars, Hoggle said. And don't forget the great ones. He'll be watching you now. Always.
He can watch from outside, Sarah said, and smiled down at Toby, imagining Jareth outside her window, peering in at her, batting at the glass. I'm never letting him in again. The Second Time, Part 2 of the Invited Series. A Labyrinth Story, written by Astolat and read by Calicurium. When Sarah was 18, 11 weeks and counting to graduation, her stepmother called her into the living room, and her father handed her a wrapped box the size of a small country, while Toby jumped up and down and yelled, "Open it, Sarah! Open!" But, Sarah said, because it wasn't her birthday, and she hadn't graduated yet, so we wanted to get you something really special, Patricia said, beaming. Go ahead. Open it. Kneeling on the floor while Toby made a gleeful pile of silver and blue confetti, Sarah lifted off the lid and lifted the dress partway out, staring at the opalescent spangled shine on the absurdly puffed sleeves, the rustle of taffeta and lace skirts, like something between a memory and a dream. Laurel's mother told me your prom theme this year is fairy tales, so I took those sketches you make all the time to a dressmaker, her stepmother said, and it was true. The dress came out in 1,000 scribbles in the margins of her notebooks, on the scratch pad by the phone, on shopping lists and address books. The dress she could draw. Everything else. Go ahead, honey. Try it on. Sarah took the box up to her bedroom and slowly put the dress on. It fit only a little less well than the other one. She looked at herself in the mirror and took her hair out of the ponytail and shook it loose over her shoulders, and one by one she took the silver hair clips from her old ballerina jewelry box and pinned it back. The clips were cheap, from the mall accessories store, all wrong, but they'd been the closest she'd found. Also, the big costume jewelry choker. She'd tried them on at home only once and thrown them into the box. But the dress... The dress was close enough to carry everything else with it, and when she came down the stairs and stood in the archway of the living room, her father and Patricia turned and looked at her, and their smiles gradually grew stiff and puzzled. "You look beautiful, sweetheart," her dad said finally, half a question, and one she couldn't answer yet. She was going to the prom with Rory Jacobson, because he had asked her. He was her lab partner in chemistry, and they'd done homework together a few times. They were sharing a limo with three other couples, to cut down on the cost, and it pulled up at her house last because they lived closest to the highway. It was raining a little, and Sarah was waiting on the porch under the lights. The driver came out under an umbrella to get the door, and stared at her as she stepped down. But then she ducked inside and the illusion broke. She squeezed in between Rory and Laurel and let Amanda give her a rum and coke.
"You look awesome!"
Rory yelled in her ear, putting his arm around her shoulders, and she gave him a small smile for answer while she put the cheap corsage on around her wrist. Wishing Well was on the radio. The hotel ballroom was decorated with Christmas lights and streamers and silver balloons, and by the door there was a basket full of masquerade dominoes that had probably come from Toys R Us. Most people weren't bothering. The room was only half full so far, of seniors already 2 drinks in, and when Rory got her a glass of the punch, at least 3 people had spiked that, too. The teacher chaperones were in a corner talking, bored, paying no attention.
"You want to dance?"
Rory said uncertainly. She was out of the limo and uncrumpled, standing under a chain of blinking white fairy lights, and she could see her reflection glittering in his eyes. Boys and girls were looking at her across the room, people she'd never even talked to all 4 years of high school. "Yes," she said, instead of, "let's wait until there are some other people dancing," because those words didn't belong in the mouth of the woman who wore this dress, and let Rory take her out onto the floor. But the music was wrong, and Rory was wrong, and his rented tux and patent leather shoes that squeaked while he tried helplessly to dance something like a waltz with her. He had probably never even seen a waltz in his life, she thought uncharitably, and didn't feel sorry for the thought. She was too busy with the creeping fear, what if this is all there is? And after only a few dances, it drove her out of his hands and out onto the hotel veranda. The rain was falling harder. Everything outside was black as pitch, except for the handful of lights on the hotel walkways shining on wet leaves. She stood breathing hard against the pulled-tight bodice strings around her waist, trapped in a bubble she couldn't break.
Sarah, Jareth whispered, always and ever lying in wait.
But this time she turned to the sound, slowly held her hand out to him, and let him use the touch to draw himself into the world. Black leather glove taking substance under her fingers, the knife-sharp points of his long glittering jeweled coat drawing themselves out of the night. His mask was black leather, and his eyes gleamed out at her from behind it. One green, one black.
"Would you dance with me, Sarah?"
he said, with his cat's smile of sharp white teeth, and she knew there would be a price. There was always a price, but she was starting to think that she might be willing to pay.
"You'll have to leave, after," she said, testing, "without taking anyone with you."
His mouth went thin and dissatisfied, but he bent his head, and then he took her hand and led her out. The music didn't seem to matter when it was Jareth leading, and neither did the other people around them, reduced to just a blur of staring, stupid faces. He was all sharp edges, as though he had collected the light from everyone else, and she had forgotten, or maybe she hadn't noticed, before, the odd prickling heat of his hands on her, even through leather and silk. It was hard to breathe against the laces of her dress.
"Sarah,"
he murmured, whirling her until the tacky decorations left dizzy, glowing trails, and when they stopped moving, it was because the clock was striking midnight. The music had ended an hour ago. Everyone else was gone. They stood alone together under the big industrial chandelier, and he raised both her hands to his lips. "I'm not afraid of you. I won't be afraid of you," Sarah said, and hoped it was still true.
"You were younger then," he said. "It's not your fear I want anymore."
If he wasn't trying to frighten her, she didn't know why she was shaking. "So what do you want from me?" He smiled, his wicked mouth the thinness of a blade, and he leaned into, and then he turned his head to one side and his lips just brushed her ear.
"What would you give me, Sarah?"
he whispered, and with a rustle of feathers, he was gone, without taking anyone at all. The third and final part of the Invited series. Written by Astolat and read by Calicuria. She slipped out of the bedroom and down the hall like a thief with something to hide. The bass beat of the stereo system downstairs was shaking the floor, and high drunken laughter and the sour smell of kegged beer came bursting up the stairs to meet her. Her coat was still lying in the big pile by the door. She went outside without even stopping, and shrugged it on one arm at a time as she walked away in the sharp, bright November air, her breath frosting. The silence in the quad was loud in her ears. She shoved her hands in her pockets while she walked back to her dorm. He'd had a kind of cheerful, easy confidence, almost a jerk, but without the stupid bluster a lot of the other football players fell into. That was what had caught her eye, in the physics for poets class they were both taking, where he sat with six other guys the size of refrigerators, and she sat in the back row alone, half hiding behind her hair and sketching the costumes for the fall production of Midsummer Night's Dream. They'd ended up in the same TA group, and he'd grinned at her once, as if he was entitled to her if he wanted her. It had been something, so she'd come to the party tonight, and she'd found him in the pool table room with a beer in his hand and three different sorority girls laughing at everything he said. He saw her standing in the doorway and grinned at her again.
"Hey, Sarah, right?"
The girls looked at her once and dismissed her. She was wearing a t-shirt from last month's Marinette show, streaked with wall paint, and a pair of ratty jeans. "Hi," she'd said, and, "Do you want to go upstairs?" He'd blinked, and then he'd started grinning even more, and he said,
"Sure,"
and put down his cup. In his room, he'd gone to put on some music, sang something, and when he turned, she drew the t-shirt off over her head and pulled herself free, letting her hair fall down around her. She looked him straight in the face, and his smile had wavered a bit. Really, she'd known right then that it was no good. He held himself off a long time before he finally came, trying, but his hands and his mouth were uncertain and anxious on her, and when she'd been above him, she'd closed her eyes so she didn't have to see him looking up at her helplessly, both of them knowing she was out of his reach. She had a single with a tiny bathroom all her own, with a crappy fluorescent yellow light bulb. She showered in the dark, quickly, and then lit a candle on the sink and looked at herself in the mirror while she combed out her hair. No makeup, water still on her face, and Jareth shaped out of the dark behind her. He smiled at her, cruel, and didn't ask out loud. He didn't have to. As his gloved hand moved over the wet bare skin of her belly, it took on weight, became solid, and there was heat behind the finger that pressed between her legs. She was already wet. The leather slid into her easily. His palm was cupped over her, and she breathed in and rocked her hips into his hand.
Sarah,
he murmured into her hair, so pleased with himself, and it made her angry, made her twist against him and reach up her hand and draw his head down to her. He bent curiously, as though he didn't understand but was willing to let her have her own silly way, and the curve of his mouth as he let her kiss him was infuriating. So she bit his lip, half vicious, and he made a low, startled noise like a hissing cat and kissed her back. They struggled in front of the mirror for a moment longer, fighting for who would steal more breath, more heat, and then she twisted around in his arms and pushed him back out into the room, and small glittering eyes were watching them from the dark screen of her small television set, from the glass in the picture frame, from the window half open to the night air. He backed away from her, wary suddenly, clinging to his armor of dark velvet and red jewels, until she reached her hands out and touched him, made him reel, and he let it slip away into smoke as she pressed him down to the bed. His thin, bare shoulders were luminescently pale against her sensible navy blue cotton sheets, and his gossamer fine hair clung crackling to her fingers. He didn't seem to know what to make of her hands on him, palms on his chest and the light scratch of her nails against his back. He caught her wrist in one hand and drew it up to his face, studying her fingers as though he expected to find an explanation. He licked at them one after another, and then licked the palm, experimentally, and finally the pulse of her wrist, and when she sighed, he sighed with her. There were resentful muttering whispers in the dark corners of the room, objecting. He raised his head and hissed at them, and they fell silent. "Jareth," she said, tasting his name. Saying it out loud felt like an invocation or a spell. He came into her, or she took him in. By then it was all the same. They moved together, and the bed beneath them wasn't a dorm room cot anymore. Strange stars rolled by outside the window, and there was a noise like the beating of wings rushing in her ears as she shuddered with him, rising, cresting, complete. He raised himself up on one arm afterwards, naked and displeased in her hard, narrow bed, looking over the room with annoyance. The hard, cold November sun was just starting to come up behind the squat science library building, and she'd left a few dirty socks on the dingy carpet floor. Her lumpy book bag was in another corner, and a bag of sewing on her desk chair. She was lying back against the cotton sheets, drowsy, and finally, finally sated, one arm behind her head, and she couldn't help laughing softly at his disdain. Somehow he didn't feel as wrong and wildly out of place as he should have, and Sarah couldn't understand why until she realized he was doing it, somehow. He was trying to make the room seem out of place instead. Wondering, she reached out and touched his shoulder. He turned on her with the same ferocity he had once used to try and persuade her to leave him with a stolen child.
"Come with me," he said. "What do you want with any of this? Come away to my kingdom, Sarah, and I will make you a queen, even if you do refuse to fear me."
"You could stay with me instead," she said, meaning it as a joke. Whatever he was doing still couldn't hide that there was no place for him in the bright ordinariness of the world, mixing with the friendly sunlight and the mildly irritating sound of cars starting up in the parking lot outside her window, the acrid smell of that one cheap scooter with its diesel engine, and the thick Turkish coffee brewing across the hallway. Renee would knock on her door in a few minutes and offer her some, sweet and black, and they would walk to costume class together. After that, it would be off to the theater for a four-hour stretch, working companionably with half a dozen people, whoever had shown up today, last one in getting takeout for lunch. Of course, she longed for magic, and it was always hardest in the dark, aching for the lack of it. But Sarah liked her life, her work, her friends. She didn't want to run away to fairyland anymore, even if she hadn't known better. Even if she hadn't known she didn't belong there. "You could stay with me instead," she said, laughing, mostly to say, "You know I can't," and stopped, because he threw her an angry, desperate look, as though he would. "You wouldn't," she said, wondering if he even could. He was the Goblin King. What would it mean for him to abandon his kingdom? And then she remembered the unhappy, muttering goblins, and fell silent.
"It will not go on this way. I will not be sent for,"
he hissed, and sprang up from the bed. He went to the window and looked out at the world like it was a prison. Sarah sat up in bed, pulling the sheets up around her, and his back went stiff and prickly, as though he was fighting the impulse to turn around and look at her. She could see her reflection in the television next to him, her arms standing out against the dark sheets, dark hair down and loose over her shoulders. An ordinary girl, and he was more magic than the world could hold, and he would put himself in a cage for her. Or for her in his pride, but that was like saying for her in breathing. "Would it help," she said, "if you could also send for me?" His head tilted, like a hunting bird listening for prey. "I won't come away," she said hastily. "Not forever, but if you let me come and go back again..." He turned. The air cloaked him as he did, in white samite and silver.
"If you come into my kingdom, willingly, you will be in my power. You may only leave it when I wish it,"
he said, with all his usual arrogance, but Sarah knew negotiation when she heard it. "Then I won't come," she said. "So make me a better offer." His mouth narrowed grudgingly.
"If you have my promise before you come through, I will be bound by it," he said. "That time only," he added.
She didn't need him to tell her he would try. Every time, to eel out of giving her that promise, that every time she took his hand and stepped through, she would be coming into the labyrinth again, with all its danger, and not just all its beauty. She didn't ask him to make it any easier.
"All right,"
she said. "Ask me in." The end. Thanks for listening.